Now, I've interviewed many breathing experts in the past, but this time I'm going to interview one of the best breathing experts in the entire world, hands down, because he's been in the field. He got his first PhD, in, I believe, in 1970, 50 years ago, or 72. And he's been doing this a long time, but he's merged two disciplines, behavioral psychology and respiratory physiology, which is an unusual combination, and has been able to uncover strategy and intervention to correct a pervasive problem that almost every one of us has. And that's a dysfunctional breathing pattern that results in lowering your CO2 levels, which is the last thing you want to do, because such a powerful component of staying healthy and optimizing your health is to have sufficiently level CO2 levels. So, and usually the reason your CO2 levels drops is because of overbreathing pattern that you've picked up. So he's going to help you understand why that's an issue. His name is Dr. Peter Litchfield, and he will discuss some interventions that you can engage in that help you identify the cause of this so you can correct it permanently and never have to worry about it. So you're really going to enjoy this information.
When you overventilate, you get a symptom. You get a physiological change, okay? And that physiological change, people have learned to respond to that change in their own unique ways. Some people, for example, when they get dizzy because they lose oxygen in the brain when they overventilate, to them, they feel like they're losing control. And they freak out. They don't know what's going on. They can't focus. They're on the verge of a panic attack. And so one of the things we're always looking at are these how people relate to the physiological changes. They're struggling whenever they eat, their breathing is all wrong. When they're talking, the breathing goes wrong. They get real lightheaded when they're talking. They can't function. They get lightheaded because they're overventilating. They're constantly trying to take another breath, you know, while they're talking to people. What's going on there? They're losing carbon dioxide. They're getting completely disoriented. Can't function. You become an expert at performing the bad habit. And if you can do it whenever you want to, you can disengage it. So you learn to do it, disengage it, do it, disengage it. And there are specific ways of doing this. We use biofeedback in this whole process. That's an important part of it. And so then you're not afraid anymore of the symptoms because you can turn them on, you can turn them off, you don't really care. You know, it's not a big deal. And in that process, you get highly reinforced. The outcome of what it does determines what it can do, you know, within the potential it has. The idea is that there's a positive outcome for restoring good respiration.
Welcome, everyone. Dr. Mercola helping you take control of your health. And we are going to be dialoguing with one of the best breathing experts in the world. I'm absolutely convinced because I've done some deep training with him and really understand what he's teaching. Normally, I have to, or don't have to, but I frequently read a book for the person, but I've actually taken Dr. Peter Litchfield's course that he provides, it makes available. So I understand what he's doing. And it's and because of that understanding, I appreciate the enormous value. I've interviewed breathing experts before, many breathing experts actually in the past, and no one compares to the understanding he has of respiratory physiology and its impact on your health. And almost every one of you is going to benefit from listening to this carefully, because virtually very few people appreciate, as I did. I did not appreciate the prevalence of dysfunctional breathing habits that are typically developed as some type of trauma, emotional trauma, typically, and it gets embedded in your brain circuits. And when you encounter this trigger, it activates them and it lowers your CO2 level. And you may have been getting a hint over the last few weeks or months that I really value CO2. It's probably one of the most important molecules in your body. And literally, I'm going to go deep in this in the next year, the upcoming year. Strategies to increase your CO2 are probably one of the best things you can do to optimize your health. So today we're going to talk about your breathing, because it's kind of like having a hole in a bucket. You know, your bucket carries the water. This is an analogy, of course. And if you got a hole, it's dripping. So you got to keep on filling it up. Well, the water equivalent would be CO2. And you really need CO2. The higher your levels you can get within biological range, normal optimal ranges, the better. Most of us are not even close to that. And here's the key. It's a long intro, but I also want to give my frame because I'm going to let Dr. Litchfield do most of the talking. If you don't understand these breathing habits, that's not where I want to go. If you are but think you're breathing well because you're belly breathing or you're deep breathing or you're doing buccal breathing, I want to give you a generalized summary. You're likely seriously confused. There's a lot more to it than you want to superficially understand. It really goes deep. And Dr. Litchfield is going to help enlighten all of us as to this. So with all that intro, welcome and thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. I'm very pleased to be here. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I want to give Dr. Litchfield a disclaimer of sorts. He's still kind enough to participate, but he had some international travel, just got back last night and had exposure to a friend of his that's staying with him, and he got the flu last night, so he's still struggling a little bit. But he feels okay. And so he's normally doesn't talk like this, but he's had an acute, unexpected surprise, and we could reschedule, but we decided to go forward, so. Cut him some slack. All right.
I can use that. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
All right. So, okay, with a dangling participle. I think the best way to start is to give us a brief summary of your clinical training, because your training is in respiratory physiology and behavioral psychology, which is a very interesting combination, and you wouldn't be able to do what you're doing if you didn't have those two mm-hmm. depths of knowledge under your belt. And to provide a masterful strategy to optimize human biology. So why don't you tell us about your journey, but keep it brief because we want to go into the meat.
All right, where do I start? I basically started in psychology, interested in animal behavior many years ago at the University of Michigan. Then I went from there to an interest in existential psychology, came back into psychology from the philosophical perspective, and then kind of traveled down through personality theory, research around personality, and then ultimately back to physiology. I took this long kind of trip through different parts of the field, which has really helped me in a lot of ways, actually. So I'm not just physiological. You know, I'm interested in the comprehensive part of what breathing is about. There's so many aspects to it. There's so many things to look at, so many things to explore. It's just a really exciting area. And so I did my PhD in experimental psychology and then became a professor of psychology immediately. That was back in 1970.
And just a little while ago.
That's a little while ago. I'm 82 now.
It's over 50 years ago.
That's over 50 years ago. That's correct. And
your PhD 50 years ago. Congratulations.
Well, I actually earned it in 1972. I had my dissertation to finish. You know how that is. It took me a little bit longer.
Yeah.
But then I got very involved in the field of behavioral medicine. Behavioral medicine came online in around 1978, something like that. And I got very involved in that field on the ground floor and also had a very strong interest in behavioral pharmacology, which has had a tremendous impact on me. A lot of what I do is based on my background, believe it or not, in behavioral pharmacology.
Wow.
I really learned some very important things there, which we might get to at some point. And then I became involved. I started up an institute in San Francisco with Chuck Strobel, who is he's passed on now, but a physician from Yale University School of Medicine. Chuck was a major player in behavioral medicine. And then Robert Fried in New York and Ken Pelletier. Maybe you know of Ken Pelletier. Mm-hmm. The four of us got involved together. We put together an institute and we put on professional education programs in mental health everywhere in the United States. I mean, from Anchorage to Key West. So I was very involved in that for a long time. Professional education was a big part of what I was doing. And of course, my main interest was in behavioral medicine and ultimately what we call behavioral physiology. And what that's about is really looking at physiology as a programmable system. That the thing that's really exciting about physiology is it self-regulates. It learns, in essence. And it does something, and there's a consequence. And based on that consequence, it changes what it does. So physiology collects information, stores information, it uses information on all levels, not just with the brain, but on a cellular level. It's collecting data, using data, and so on. And that's what we call learning, ultimately. And what we call really behavior. Behavior is a physiological kind of a phenomenon. But for me, physiology really is psychophysiological because it's a learning system. And whether it's conscious or not, that's another. You could argue about that forever. But we're not going to take that up here. But one of the things that's important in the work that we do in breathing based on this is that people need to learn to form a partnership with their own identity in the world, with their bodies. That the body is a learning, living system. The day the first cell came into existence, psychology was born. Okay, and so that is really such an important thing to understand. It's not just you, obviously, who's doing the breathing. Your body is doing the breathing. And it's not just, these aren't just genetic things or organic things. The body gets programmed constantly by virtue of what it does and what results from what it does. And breathing is no exception. I mean, you look at the kind of habits that we learn in our lives. Look at my hands. I'm moving my hands right now. Look at my head. This is I learned this unconsciously. And I'm just a whole collection of amazing habits, thousands of habits that come into play at just exactly the right time. So the right thing happens at the right time, and I don't even have to think about it. That's the nature of a habit. But they don't always go well. They can go wrong. And the habits always serve people. There's always an outcome that's serving someone. You don't engage in a habit unless it serves you somehow or it serves your physiology. So one of the things that's really important in the work is we talk about our client and we talk about their body and helping them form a partnership between the body and themselves so that they explore themselves and learn about the habits that have been learned. They're not generally even aware of the habits that have been learned. So you establish this connection. And in a sense, that's kind of your unconscious. In a sense, it's the consciousness of your physiological system that you're unconscious. You claim it because it's in your body. So it's got to be yours and you're not fully conscious of it. So as far as you're concerned, it's about, you know, this is my unconscious. But that relationship is so important to understand. And so what we're really focused on in our work in breathing is we're interested in breathing as a behavior. We're not using breathing as a technique. You know, you manipulate breathing so you can relax, or you manipulate breathing to have some otherworldly experience where you dissociate, disconnect, or whatever it is. There's all kinds of reasons that people, you know, bring on board some kind of technique. Our work isn't about breathing techniques.
Excuse me for interrupting, sure. But I just want to, you know, having had the benefit of taking your work, I just want you to emphasize that point, because that, my friends, is the crux of what he's teaching. So I want you to repeat it again, maybe state it a little bit differently, because these habits are what are unconsciously sabotaging you profoundly, profoundly enough to make the voluntary choice to pick up the phone and call the paramedics because you think you're dying because of these voluntary habits. And I'm sure he's going to go into sharing the statistics on that. So repeat that again, because it is super vitally important.
Well, in essence, if you think of physiology as behavior, it's doing things all the time, and it's learning things based on the outcomes of what it does. And another thing that's very important, there is a trigger for every habit. It's just not there all the time. It shows up at specific times, highly specific times. And this is what you see, for example, in the statistics in the larger cities in the United States, like New York City, Chicago, Los Angeles, that surveys show that about 60%, if you can believe that, 60% of the ambulance runs in these cities are a result of symptoms that are brought on by dysfunctional breathing. And it's not as if this person is breathing dysfunctionally all the time. It's that, at a particular moment, they breathe this way, then that precipitates these symptoms. They don't understand where they're coming from. They don't think of their breathing. Maybe some of them do, but they have no idea where these symptoms are coming from. They call 911 if you're in the United States, you know, and they end up in an emergency. And what do they get? They basically, after a little while, they go home. Maybe they get a prescription for anxiety or something. Maybe they get a referral. But what happens is that this happens over and over and over and over again. I'm not going to mention names, but a man who's extremely well known, he's passed on now, but extremely well known in the area of breathing. I mean, everyone knows who he is. Yeah, he's a healthcare professional, highly trained, many books and so on, breathing. You know, and he focused on breathing as a physical thing. It's not a psychophysiological thing. There was no learning in any of it. He just practiced doing the right kind of breathing at the right time or something. And it turned out, when I first met him, that he had been going to the ambulance, you know, almost monthly in the UK for help because of the symptoms his breathing was bringing on. And here's this incredible expert at what he does. I mean, he's a really talented man. And he was a victim of a habit that he'd learned, but never identified it. And a lot of what our work is about is identifying these habits. You know, what is a breathing habit? What do you look for? So there's many components of it. First of all, there's motivation.